What does it take to build a full stack, risk first and collections focused lending engine?
We've never seen that kind of money in our lives, right? We come from a humble, lower middle class background.
That fintech is more fin than tech, and we look for that kind of ethos.
I think we got into a sort of a war room when you realize that there is a lockdown, and on top of that, RBI had introduced moratorium, right? Customers stopped paying. So it was a real crisis situation.
At least 15% of our customers are working in financial services industry. They don't get loans and they come to us.
Lending is a highly technical business. It's a knowledge heavy duty industry. But what sadly everybody is mistaking it to be is just a customer acquisition and growth engine.
We suddenly became favorites from not getting an appointment to enter the room to being in the top 4 or 5 of the top 10 national DSAs in the country.
Now, when you asked me to take a look at Finable, I said no chance.
Welcome to Zero to Infinity, Z47's podcast. I am Anish. I lead the fintech and financial services practice here. Today on Zero to Infinity, Vikram and I will be speaking to Nitin and Amit, the co-founders of Finable.
Super excited to have both Nitin and Amit. Nitin, let me start with you. And we always love the early founder story. And Nitin, this is your second startup, Stan Chart Banker. That's where you guys sort of met and shared rooms in flats at that point in time. Then started your first company, sold it.
Yeah.
And then realized that you wanted to build a lending company all along, and then came back and started this. Just walk us through that journey and how this came about with Amit.
So thanks Vikram for organizing this podcast. I've been an entrepreneur for 15 years and a banker before that for 8 years. Both of us met at Standard Chartered Bank. We used to be the best buddies there. I was leading the analytics team and he was leading the business portfolio management team there. The first startup I did, Net Positive, he was very keen that he wanted to go to Singapore at that time to get some international exposure. And for me, my Baniya blood was boiling that for how long will I work for a bank? I need to do something on my own. So that's how in 8 years I quit StanChart and thought of building my first startup. In the second startup, I was sure that if it is not him, then it will be a problem, right? In my mind, I used to always think that this one person I want as a co-founder is this man sitting next to me. That's how we got Amit excited and we became partners in Infinable journey.
So talk a little bit about that Net Positive journey.
Yeah.
It's a very different company. You decided to sell it, but then that led to this idea.
Yeah. So a Net Positive story, actually, Viraj was the other co-founder. So Viraj and I always have thought it multiple times. Let's start penning on what we went through. It was a crazy journey. I'll tell you why crazy. First of all, we were bankers. I was managing analytics there. Viraj was the head of business for credit cards. We never knew what a startup meant, right? And that startup ecosystem has evolved today. Back 2005 and 6, startup means is what was meant for losers. If you're not doing well in your lives, you then maybe do something on the side and try to make living out of it, right? And we were doing so well in our respective jobs. It took a lot of convincing at home front, family front, parents front to start something. And then we started, right? So this is our first day in Net Positive. We are waiting throughout the day. We get two emails. One email Viraj has sent to me, one some vendor has sent with some proposal. Whereas in StanChart, we used to get some 200 mails a day. So that's how our journey started. We slowly learned how to bundle a product, how to do pricing for a product. All was new for us. So all in all, very interesting journey. Got good clients. We were working with 35 marquee clients in India, all in the financial services space. And
what were you doing for these clients actually?
So we used to do analytics, right? To put it very simplistically. Basically, we used to churn reams of data and get insights from that data, right? Be it for customer acquisition or be it for collections or fraud detection or whatever. There was limited data at that time. Data explosion happened much after that now. But whatever data was available, we used to churn that and build some insights. And banks were like, they were very happy with the work that we were doing. Because first of all, this was first time that people started using analytics in the country. So they were very excited with whatever we are presenting. And that actually taught me that most of the banks and NBFCs that are operating in India, they're working on the same customer segment, right? Everybody wants the same customer who earns more than 50,000 rupees monthly, who is working for a top-notch employer like an Infosys. Let's give a loan to those customers, right? That's where we saw an opportunity. That why is nobody thinking beyond these customers? Why is nobody thinking of what comes next in the pyramid, right? There is a big 70-80% workforce which is not being addressed. So I think that's where somewhere the thought of doing your own lending platform for these customers kind of crept into our minds.
How did you end up deciding to sell?
That's a very wrong nerve to touch, Vikram, if you ask me. One reason I repent in my life is that decision, we sold that company just too fast. I think we were scaling brilliantly. We had, as I said, top-notch clients. Equifax was one of our clients, and we were doing international and domestic work for them. They just gave an offer and both of us just kind of saw an offer and said yes.
I thought the answer was that because you were meant to build this with him and that's
that. Actually, if you connect the dots now,
looking
back, it makes perfect sense that maybe there was a bigger calling and something like this had to happen.
And you know, we see this often in founder journeys where the first one, you end up, a lot of people end up selling.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit too early because you want that, you know, you want that recognition and you want the wealth.
Absolutely.
That accumulates.
We've never seen that kind of money in our lives, right? We come from a humble, lower middle class
background. And then we see this consistently across our founder journey that the second one, then you're building for really the, you know, the 100-year journey and building the institution and so on.
Yeah.
Coming back to sort of how this came about, I just heard a funny story of how, you know, it almost didn't happen, but it happened because, you know, he was back staying in the same house as you.
Yeah, no, true. So this is what we call serendipity, right? Whatever has, if you look back and connect the dots, it all makes sense. So we were living in on old Airport Road earlier in Bangalore, and we were comfortable there. Suddenly, I had an idea that we should move to Adarsh Palm Retreat. And our office also we took close by in a place called Coworks. And he was in Singapore then. He used to travel for his work to Bangalore quite often. And Standard Chartered office was on the fifth floor in the same building, right? I was preparing a deck to show it to an investor. And he said, "Dikha, kya kar raha hai?" I said, "Ye deck bana raha hu." Bola, "Kya, acha, just show it to me." "Oh, acha, why is your APR so low for this segment? You can increase it. I think there is a scope to improve in the onboarding journey." And he started giving his inputs to the deck, right? And then it just kind of, the discussion matured more and more. Within 2 weeks, we were discussing if we should join hands together and build this together. That's how it transpired.
So often you find the best co-founders in some shared past experience and lived experience. So, Amit, go back to sort of the early days, StandChart, one of the best sort of crucibles of talent at that time. Walk a little bit through your journey because you were almost a lifer at StandChart, essentially building so many businesses. And then what sort of finally clicked that you said, "Ye karna hai"?
You know, I spent my life with the bank. So, that's the only company I worked for. 22 years, 5 different countries, 12 different kind of roles in that time. And it all started in the cards space where all of us were together. And you know, those days, I think I can never forget because huge amount of camaraderie and friendships that we built. We used to torture each other, like he was explaining about, you know, what was the joke that you beat the data till the time it gives you the answer,
right,
ask him to data to give, right? So I think, you know, fantastic growing up days. I think we were doing stuff ahead of industry in the company, in cards. A lot of people who were in the cards business at that time, and credit to the leaders who built the team, right, actually are all rocking the financial services industry in India today.
In that,
I mean, we recently had a selfie with Shyam Srinivasan, who came back to our office, joined TVS, and you know, he came back. He was, you know, our boss during cards days. Pradeep used to be our buddy, who's now,
IDFC.
You know, of course, Murli has done various roles, is now in Africa. Vishu, who was, you know, the super boss, is back in India actually doing startup again. So he wanted to buy one NBFC. He said, "I bought two." So he's just starting up again. So
I mean, there's just so many all around us, right? Shalini, of course.
So,
there are just, so that cohort was special. And I'm very happy that I had the opportunity to be part. Actually, both of us, had the opportunity to be part of those early kind of fantastic days when we did many firsts. And many things that we did in the cards business those days was something that was happening first time in the country as a whole. Card itself was, City and us were the only two card players in those days, right? So, and that kind of then stayed with me through the year. And, my journey has been very interesting. I did in these years, I did various business roles. I did risk roles. I did compliance roles that nobody in the world, including me, could think that I would run it. I was the chief operating officer running, digital transformation at some point. Did so many startups within the bank, right? So, all of that was my journey. And I was actually done doing banking. I thought, it's the same thing again and again. And there was this thing inside that, is it all because of the bank that you're able to deliver all of this, or you really have it in you to do it on your own? And partly that. There was another big thought in my head that I always wanted to come back to India. I wanted my kids to be growing up here. I also had this thing of, actually doing something for the country. You will laugh now, but at that time I saw, Arvind Kejriwal starting this party and all that. I was hugely inspired, right? I said, boss, there is a time to give back and, you must do something. I actually love the cause for which we picked up the business, right? So we started talking about it actually even earlier in your golden enclave days when we were, drawing as to what could this be looking like. And, I was like, boss, personal loan is risky. It's unsecured and so on, right? And I thought it's a beautiful way to actually give the experience that the entire banking industry is busy giving to higher income people, to people who are from humble backgrounds. And we decided that we'll give them an experience that's actually better than what is available to the riches of the world, right? And I'm so happy and proud that today we are able to actually give them loans in the most seamless manner, in the most comfortable, convenient manner. So,
it's amazing that it all came together beautifully.
Yeah.
And then you got the timing perfectly right.
We got the timing perfectly right, man. It can't get better. So, there's this funny story, right? So, my wife, who also used to work for Stanchart, she really kind of was like, are you sure you want all of us to leave our jobs and then move back to India? I said, yes, I'm very sure. She definitely was sure that if nothing else, this guy has had a midlife crisis. This is going to, this doesn't seem like it's all going to land very well, but she still supported. And we moved and we landed here. And then a year or 1.5 years in, right, we had almost built a close to 100 crore kind of a book. And this was through a platform business. And then the COVID hit us, right? So, Shamla and I were sitting and she's like, yeah, okay, that was a very good decision. So what do you plan to do now, right? And honestly, we were putting a brave front to everybody. And we were like, man, this hasn't landed. Like, we were ready for building a stable business, but will it be so resilient right now? I mean, I'm not sure. And we really sat down and, I think that's like a story in itself, right?
We love crisis-tested founders and crisis-tested firms. So talk about that. I think you guys rolled out sort of that crisis. And I truly think that it formed the company that is there today.
Yeah.
So what were some of the biggest learnings? How did you then arrive at what are like 2-3 things that we will stand for? And honestly, since then, that's all you've done.
Yeah. I think we got into a sort of a war room. When you realize that there is a lockdown and on top of that, RBI had introduced moratorium, right? Customers stopped paying. So it was a real crisis situation. I mean, you have 100 crores outstanding in the market. Our personal net worth put together can't really pay back 100 crores. So, and we had around 10 people in collections at that time. Collections, we made a choice very early on, we'll have in-house. And we had around 5-6 people across operations and disbursals team. So a team of around 15-16 people. And I remember we had 5,000 customers at that point. So we said, okay, let's divide this 5,000 customers between 15 of us, including two of us, 17. So we get around 300 customers per head. And we'll start calling these customers and asking them what's going on in their life, right? I think it may sound very kind of transactional, but that really was a game changer for us, right? we build relationships with our customers. We understood what are they going through. Like 70-80% of them lost their job. But we were in touch, okay, what is the scene looking like? Are you applying for new jobs? I mean, we were at one point counseling them for finding a job. So 300 customers is not a big deal, right? You can talk to them over a 4-5 days period. So that's what we did for 3-4 months. We used to talk to them daily, made sure that they are, then we started step up repayments, right? Okay, your EMI is 3,000, fine. Don't pay us 3,000, start with 500, then go to 1,000, then pay 3,000. I think that kind of made a very strong bond with the customer, and only 8% was a lifetime loss from that 100 crore business that we had at that point of time, which was like, I believe, the industry best.
There are 2-3 other things that became very clear. So prior to that, for the whole, say, 1.5 odd years, we had tested various things. We tested small ticket personal loans. We tested shopping loans. And then there was this segment, which was always there as like the bedrock of everything that we were doing, right? Which was performing very well. There was a natural demand. But we were also, you know, testing this segment along with everything else, that could they really hold a 2 lakh rupee loan to a 25,000 rupee customer? And our initial hypothesis was that the behavioral separation, because the guy who's borrowing 2.5 is a very sincere guy who genuinely wants to build a long-term, you know, future for herself or himself, versus a person who's borrowing 20,000 to carry over a month, right? So that was kind of our hypothesis. And in many ways, we realized that customer segment hypothesis landed very well, because all these customers actually are responsible for not only themselves, but their families back home. The money was used for a genuine purpose. They didn't want the civil records to be spoiled. They came back, right? And they came back, they all found jobs and they started paying back. Now, that really then set our story going from there on, right? The second thing that landed well against all, I would say pretty much the entire industry who challenged us on why collections, right? Why are you building collections in-house? Your third employee you hired is the head of collections. What is this? I mean, that, you know, small collections team that we had during COVID days, the way the relationships got built with the customers, the way they got the money back into the company, just explains that, you know, this whole thought process around, you know, I will do everything digitally. Actually, we always knew this in India, you need to have a physical presence, and having that physical approach and building that collection capability upfront was a big differentiator for us. So I guess those of digital and this whole customer segment kind of really landed during those days.
I'll actually come back to this flywheel of the customer segment. What is the customer? Let's unpack that a little bit along with your model. But before that, I have a question for Vikram. Sounds like their timing was right, but our timing was also very right. 15 years of no unsecured consumer lending of your investing journey, and you have not taken a single bet. Why didn't you take a bet through all those years, and what changed?
Mera bhi number tha 001, so it was reserved for these guys. I think it's not that we have not done consumer lending, because if you look at a lot of our cards businesses and digital cards businesses and digital neobank businesses, they all approach that same segment, but in a very different way. And we thought that transaction-focused consumer businesses were the right way to do this. And honestly, for us, it's not that we hadn't looked at some of these, and some of those companies have done really well, some companies that we have passed on and so on. But there was some, I would say, hesitation on where these companies were in different cycles and so on. So if I just look at that first cycle of consumer fintechs, I think they overbuilt tech and underbuilt fin in some ways. And, you know, that first vintage hasn't done as well. And that's sort of proven that out, that they were just over allocated on the tech side and not enough on the fin side. Like one of the first choices you made was collections in-house. That was not a choice that they would have made. They made it over a period of time. So I think that's one thing that, you know, we had learned from our journeys like Five-Star and so on, that fintech is more fin than tech, and we look for that kind of ethos. The second set of journeys, I think there was a lot of emphasis, I think, on different consumer segments, especially the informal consumer segment. And we always had, because we had invested in a secured segment beyond informal, I would say there are actually good companies in there, but maybe that was more our bias that held us there. So I think it was also our own timing.
Right.
We were also ready for the business. But I know when you asked me to take a look at Finable, I said no chance. And I don't know if you guys...
It's not just me. He called up somebody also for some senior banker for saying, you know, I'm potentially thinking of this investment. What do you think? He said, itne saal nahi kiya, abhi karna hai. Is part of the cycle mein. So I think this was early 2024. Things had already started to slow down and books were already showing.
It's stress. One of your dear friends in the industry only. So that did pull me back because, you know, when we invested and we were, you know, we first started the...
late December, 23 December.
Yeah. And that was when, you know, you started seeing the cracks starting to appear in the credit cycle. And we're still, you know, figuring out if we're off the bottom or not, right? So we knew that we were... going to a hard credit cycle.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the things that really drew me is that you were saying exactly the opposite of what everyone was saying.
Yeah.
You were saying, one, you were saying salaried. Everybody else was saying informal. Second, you were saying DSA and phygital. Everyone else was saying only digital. Third, you were saying, oh, I will do like this deep verification, which I like, that you will actually do physical verification, physical checks and so on. So, and you were doing, at that point of time, short-term personal loan was the the big flavor. Breakout journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you were saying, we will not do STPL.
Yeah.
So I think I'm a little bit of a sucker for the contra bets, and I really wanted to then, and that's what drew me more than Anish's pitch, that essentially that everything that you're saying is opposite of what, of what the, I would say, the collective wisdom in the industry is saying.
Yeah. Mm.
And you were saying something opposite. And then I met you. I realized it's not like just a gimmick.
Yeah.
But you had deep conviction on each of these different points.
Yeah.
And then I think it's sort of like just history. I think that partnership was just meant to be.
Yeah.
But I'll pick up on one thing that they said before, which is this thing about the segment. And I characterize this segment as, and maybe one of you said it in different ways, but it is essentially high income stability, but low income mobility.
Yeah.
Right, and I think you say this, that I can underwrite the income and where they are going to be for pretty much forever.
Yeah.
10 saal ke liye, 10 years I can say that this is what their salary is going to be.
Yeah.
And because I can say that, you can actually extend a larger loan for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
I thought it was a very fundamentally very, very nice insight. Yeah. And then after that, everything flowed from there.
Yeah.
That because you have that customer segment, where do I find them? We have to do a lot of deep work.
Yeah.
Who can help us find these guys? DSAs can help find them. Then you craft the journeys and so on. But I think that fundamental sharp insight on that consumer segment, I think then defines everything in the company.
So I'd love to unpack a little bit about that, what he said, and maybe take us through a little bit about, it's a set of contra choices with conviction that you've built, but they all seem to fit into a flywheel.
Yeah.
So right from the customer segment, maybe you should spend some time on what is this customer and why did you decide to give them a 2-3 lakh rupee loan when nobody in the industry was giving?
I'll take a step back actually before coming to the customer segment. What we believe, okay, and I want everybody who's running a lending company to believe in this, that lending is a highly technical business, okay? It doesn't sound like that, but it is. It is like space tech, you think is very, kind of technical, right? Building an EV vehicle, very technical. So is lending. Just that you are not investing in heavy duty machineries, but you are investing in very heavy duty processes and scorecards. It's a knowledge heavy duty industry, right? But what sadly everybody is mistaking it to be is just a customer acquisition and growth engine. It's not. Unless you have the entire process mapped out. And the second thing about lending is it's a customer journey product. It's not a buy and use and forget about. It's not shut it, fill it, whatever. Fill it, shut it, forget it product, right? Customer stays with you for a 3-year journey. And customer will have slip-ups on payments. At the time of acquisition, there might be a lot of fraud. When customer slips up on the regular payment, how do you handle that customer? Customer finally will stop paying. How do you recover from that customer? So there are a lot of in customer journey milestones that you need to really map out in the beginning and have infrastructure ready for each of those milestones in the customer journey. And that's what we have done. That's what we pride ourselves really in.
Got it. So who is this customer? Just bring it to life. What is the archetype of this customer? Why do they need this loan? what is the kind of loan that you're giving that nobody else or very few people in the industry are giving?
Actually, the customer persona, they are now spread across industries because this is SME in India. They're spread across the industries. They're younger in age. That's what our target population is, 21 to 35 years old. Income 15,000 to say 35, 40,000 rupees. Now, this is 70% of India's workforce, right? These are our customers, right? All of them, these are our customers. These are responsible, right? So they're responsible. They want to give back to the parents, to the family. They owe a lot. And there are a lot of expenses are back to help, you know, folks back home. And really, that's the persona who we are.
Actually, I'll add to it. For example, when we were earning net positive, right? We used to have data scientists who are earning 50,000 rupees a month. They are like PhDs who are earning like 70,000, 80,000 a month, but no loans available, right? Because net positive was a startup, very low revenue. It wouldn't qualify for the as an eligible right. employer for any of these banks, right? We used to give loans from, we used to kind of help the employees to get some company, some loan advances. Even now, I'm talking about 15 years back, right? Even now, Finable, or now at least we are profitable and there is, we may have been categorized as some, in some slab. But just 2 years back, we had to give our employees loans because they were not getting loans from outside. So that model has not changed in the industry, right? This customer segment, which is getting salary, stable salary in the bank account, as he mentioned, provident, all the checks are being passed, but still since you work for a smaller company, you don't get loans.
But I think
that's the customer profile.
And it's interesting, we did a lot of consumer interviews, but that's also true of like a, even like a government school teacher.
Yeah.
Or a private school teacher in a small city.
Absolutely.
And even that person is classified like that, right?
Absolutely.
So
teachers, nurses,
KPO, BPO employees. Yeah.
Funniest was the small finance bank employee who didn't get a loan from his own. Financial institution.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. At least 15% of our customers are working in financial services industry. They don't get loans.
Yeah.
And they come
because the other vector on which banks kind of qualify the customers is the salary, right? So minimum salary is 50,000. Now there are like tons of employees. 16,000 is a minimum salary stipulated by the government. Between 16, 17 to 50, there are tons of employees. Like 70% of the workforce is actually sitting there. Who is catering to them, right? That's where Finable comes in. And that's what we want to build the company on, that customer segment.
So you chose this customer segment. And then one of the things with consumer lending is there is underwriting risk and then there is fraud risk.
Yeah.
And I think you guys took a very early decision that you're okay with underwriting risk and you build it into the model in some ways.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to what levels you will underwrite. But fraud risk, you said you must eliminate.
Yeah.
So just walk through that journey of eliminating fraud risk.
See, we are in the business which is all about risk, right? So as you're mentioning rightly, there is underwriting risk, there is fraud risk, collection risk, and all seeping through all of this is the process risk, right? So again, how we have kind of put infra in place to take care of each and every risk. I mean, fraud risk is a very interesting one because we believe that if we can take care of the fraud risk, you eliminate 50% of your NPA straight away, right? Because see, why would customer go bad? Either they are intentionally bad when they're coming, they want to fraud the system, or during the 3-year tenure of the loan, there are some problems customer is facing, which there's not an intentional problem because of company not doing well or they're losing their job or whatever, right? So if you can take care of half of that, because remaining half, you really can't predict, right? You can have your processes to take care of that customer, but what you can predict is the fraud risk, right? So the kind of systems that we have put in place, I mean, when we started the business, we had some 20 risk algorithm. Today we have 200 plus risk algorithm, right? We triangulate data from multiple sources because the beauty of our business model is we have digital data for sure, but we have a lot of physical data that we have collected over time, right? We have 600 people in collections who are meeting the customers who are delinquent. They are understanding the patterns there. If it's a fraud, what kind of fraud did the customer do because of it? And we were not able to kind of catch it, right? For example, work email ID fraud. There are fraudulent domain names being opened on which work email IDs are established, right? So you need to have a algorithm looking at the work email ID itself, right? For example, people are, they are ghost customers. They will give you an address, which will have a address proof also, but you will never find them there, right? So then you need to do physical verification for that customer. So I think those are the kind of measures we have taken. And we have, so when we started the business, we have 50 basis points and 0.50% of fraud risk. Today we have brought it down to 0.25. It's really halved the fraud risk in last 7 years.
You know, one of the most, one of the very learned fintech founders once told me the two big things fintechs of wave one or wave two missed is actually address verification and collections on your own payroll. Yeah. Because, you know, if you don't know what the customer, where the customer is, and if he's not there at where he's told you he is, you can never collect from that customer because migration is a big risk. And second is having collections on your own payrolls. In fact, when we spoke to one of the lenders, they said, "Arey, but Finable ka to bahut bada collections team hai." For a minute, I was wondering, is he saying that as a positive thing or a negative thing?
Yeah.
And then obviously we looked at your OPEX and all, and they were obviously best in class. So we'll come to that later. But you talk about fraud. How is fraud mitigated? You have a phygital strategy, right? So you have a managed digital source, DSA sourcing strategy, for which I will take some credit for that term.
But coining the word.
Managed DSA sourcing, phygital with collections on book.
Credit is shared.
Credit is shared. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So you have collections on roll, then you have this entire fraud engine. So how does it all add up? Does it add up on OPEX? Does it add up on credit costs?
So I think you know, first on the phygital strategy and, you know, how we've kind of come to the decision of, say, managed DSA model to start with, right? So we started online. The first year of sourcing completely happened online. And we were able to find this good quality customer who earns, you know, this much money and can give a 2 lakh rupee loan online. But then post-COVID, things changed. There was this onslaught of fintech investment and, you know, for the lack of a better word, growth hacking through the book building process. And what happened is we were looking at online. Every time we find a customer, you know, they were like, they had already taken multiple loans. And right from day one, our model had a simple rule that if you've taken a 20,000 rupee loan once, we will not give you a loan. So it became almost impossible to find the right quality customer at the right cost online. Our model or our thesis, right from the beginning is very clear. We are in an unsecured lending business and you won't give a loan out if that loan doesn't make profits for you. There's no point running this business in losses and just scaling an unsecured book because it's nothing else but big lumpy unsecured exposure, right? So we are very focused on finding the right customer who's actually profitable at an individual customer level. So we very quickly realized that, you know, it's a credit hungry population online. We got to find other sources. Then we got onto this physical channel, which is the DSA channel. Now with the DSA channel, there was a big challenge because the DSAs work for the banking industry. And they were like, boss, I'm busy doing 10 lakh rupee loans. Why would I think about a 2 lakh rupee loan? That won't work for me. In fact, we tried to talk to many DSAs and they said, oh, 2 lakh, how will it work for us? So it took us some time, but DSAs are also very, very smart entrepreneurs. They look at bottom line, they look at profitability, they look at productivity better than anybody else does in this space, right? So it took them a little time to understand that today when they're going out in the market sourcing, through that channel, they're getting at least 30 to 40% of their sourcing, which is in this category of segments that we lend to, that they don't have any other lender who's lending. These are the individual employees of SME companies. And I could show them in their funnel. The moment they saw that at no extra cost, now I add a new lender who will solve for this customer segment, there was no looking back, right? So we suddenly became favorites from not getting an appointment to enter the room to being in the top 4 or 5 of the top 10 national DSAs in the country. You know, our managed DSA model, which is our teams managing the channel partners, you know, started to fly. And then the quality of customer with this, right? Because when we were doing customer reviews and customer interviews, we spent like a lot of time talking to customers, understanding this customer persona. There were a lot of barriers. Like I was very surprised. Normally in the bank, when we go to borrow, get CASA, current and saving account, then you face a question saying, okay, who are you? Can I give you money? Now here comes a customer who's saying, who are you? Should I be able to take money from you? I was like, boss, paise to main de raha hu yaar. Why are you asking me who am I? But these customers, one, there are a few barriers. One, they know they will not get the loans from the banks. It's a very interesting insight. They know it. That bank will not give me a loan.
Second, they're very worried about their own personal standing in the
society.
So they want to borrow from somebody who they can trust. They can be a good relationship. They will know hanky-panky practices. The whole Chinese loan apps that came in the middle, that didn't do any good, which created a lot of challenges in loan in collection practices, and that created a further risk or worry in their heads, right? So all of it put together, it was clear that a physical touch point here, somebody who you know, who you can trust is helping you get a loan, was an ideal way of getting the loan. And then these DSAs are not like a one-man shop. They're like thousands of connectors on the ground who are actually managing mini pockets, right? And they are operating in their area of the network of people they know. So that's how this channel became our preferred channel, both from a customer standpoint, because we thought this is the right way to get it, the quality of customer, because we could, the funnel on the DSA started to look like a 20% from top to bottom versus a 1% funnel that I was running on online. So I guess the combination of these things led to this.
But if you go through a DSA, one of the prevailing wisdom statements is, then you don't own the customer. But you guys have designed it differently.
Yeah.
On sort of owning the consumer end to end, such that, like you said, that finable relationship is paramount. Yeah. So talk through that consumer journey. How does it go in the app, and then really building a relationship with that consumer?
So there are actually multiple risks that come with the DSA model, right? And that's where a lot of thought process comes in. We actually went through, it was not as simple. It was a very tough journey because we went through actually digitizing the entire DSA setup first, right? So one of the biggest risks that comes from there is fraud risk, which is, can the documents be forged? Can the multi-funding happen? Can those, can we trust this whole thing, right? Now with digitization, what happened is, apart from the lead, I need nothing else from the DSA, which was actually very liberating for the DSA himself. They said, wow, all I have to do is enter the name and number, that's it. Because everything else is available through data triangulation online, right? So that worked like magic. We could disburse loan in 3 hours in DSA space, which they had not seen. And it was super simple because they would come enter basic details into the partner portal. And then onwards, we take over the relationship. That's really where the managed DSA model came in handy, right? So our sales guys would take over the relationship. Is there a staff assist required to the customer? They will do that. Otherwise, the entire customer journey then runs on Finable app, right? So one, we mitigated the entire data or the document fraud kind of a risk by removing documents because those are not needed. We can fetch everything online. And second, the customer relationship became Finable customer early in the day. And then, that's how it continued. Another beautiful part is, Vikram, in our segment, there is really no other lender who's, like, even after 1 year or 2 years of borrowing, when this customer's CIBIL score becomes 750, the customer continues to work for a small and medium enterprise. The customer probably has gone from 30,000 rupee loan to 35,000 or 40,000 rupee salary. So this customer is still not eligible to be beated out, or another big bank is coming looking for this customer. So there is no risk in that way as well. So it really worked wonderfully from us.
And you have 400, 500 people on the ground managing these DSAs as well as doing physical address verification.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So they manage the DSAs. They also do their own sales. So it's a direct sales model as well. So it's a combination.
And I'm assuming initially when you could build both sides, the collections and the field force, it also had to do with the fact that you could afford that.
Yeah. You talked about the OPEX, right? So, I mean, if you total up all of this, it sounds like we are running a physical, there are a lot of physical kind of teams involved. But if you add it up.
This looks like heavy cost, unprofitable.
Exactly. It looks and like heavy linear. Cost, unprofitable, right? So that's what I want to answer. First of all, let's look at the credit cost for any unsecured lender, right? If you are like a real up there gold standard, 2% analyzed, it can go up to 20% if you're not managing a risk well, right? That's the kind of gap you can, credit cost can create in your P&L, 2% to 20%, right? And when I put all of my costs together, let's say manage DSA, we have 500 people to manage that, 600 people in collections, all of that put together, my OPEX doesn't go beyond 2.5%, right? If I'm able to save even a percent and a half extra on my credit cost, my investments are justified because this is a cost which I can predict. Credit cost is a cost which I cannot predict if things go wrong, right? So I'm making my credit cost more predictable by investing in a predictable line of business. That's, I think, is how we look at it.
I mean, in the worst of times, like the COVID discussion that we had, right? Our losses went from, say, 2.5% annualized to
4%.
4% yeah. annualized, right? That's really the kind of volatility we saw. And then back to 3-2.5 levels post-COVID. Even this current stress, the consumer stress that we've gone through, the industry is going through, we are closing this year at 2.1% annualized loss rate.
Putting all this together, it usually means that you know, if you made all this investment in tech, you also made this investment in OPEX and so on, then usually it means that you've burnt a lot of cash.
Yeah.
But you guys have burnt like $5-6 million in your lifetime.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I saw that number, obviously, I knew that I was dealing with seasoned founders who will not burn through cash.
Yeah.
So how did you manage that, right? Because it just does seem like you've sort of made every dollar count.
Yeah. I think we were clear, as I was mentioning earlier, right? There are different processes that need to be tightly managed in a lending industry. And that's where the investment need to go in. Right? I've seen, and I'm nothing against them, there are fintech founders who have 200 people in the tech team who are trying to optimize the customer onboarding journey. Customer onboarding journey is just a part of managing the lending business, right? We have 20 people in our tech team. And this is now after we have scaled up to a 3,000 crore of AUM. When we started, we have 2 to 3 people, right? So, therefore, invest in the right place, what is required to run a lending business. Stay away from gizmos. I mean, there's one friend of mine who was telling me that he wants to design an unsecured business where customer can choose their EMI dates, right? There can be 30 possible EMI dates. I said, very good idea, but imagine there'll be 30 month ends for the collection people. You think you can manage it? There is no way you can put any amount of tech and manage that kind of a problem, right? So you need to understand what is needed for the ship that you are building and then put the right machinery and tools in place.
Great. So just to now, you know, he spoke about how you've burnt 6 million to get here. Talk us a little bit about also on the liabilities. When we first looked at sort of the lenders you're working with, there is sort of a different set of folks who would typically not partner with fintechs, or we haven't at least seen them partner with fintechs. So maybe give us, how receptive were they to this 2-3 lakh loan, to this customer, whom do you work with, and sort of how has that journey scaled over the last 3-4 years?
So see, our thought process again, you know, if you always start with some thesis. So here we had our thesis saying, boss, we will not go with 10 lenders because we have to do maybe 50 crores right now. So we picked one lender. And then our thought process was we'll pick a few lenders and we'll go deep. So one thing that we both take, you know, we're most proud of is that every lender who we started the journey with on day zero is a lending partner with us today, right? They've all scaled with us. So we went to the like-minded people who understood risk, who understood customer experience, and who could partner with us in our thought process. By the way, the lenders love the long tenor, high ticket loan business at a reasonable APRs because we are operating sub 30% APR, right? So that's exactly the sweet spot, I would say. And today it has become even bigger than what it was back then because, you know, there were some lenders who were like, oh, why only 30 crores monthly with us? We want 300 crores monthly. Then we said, sorry, then we can't partner with you, right? So we landed up getting the type of lenders we have on our table. We started our relationship with DMI. We give a lot of credit to them for helping us back then and being a partner even today. And then slowly, one by one, we added Northern Arc, TVS, TVS Credit. And today, the journey has moved to banks. So the journey started with Utkarsh Small Finance Bank. When we went to Varanasi, first figured, and I thought, man, I don't think digital partnership can happen here, right? The way they were operating. But huge credit. It's one of the most entrepreneurial organizations I've seen. The way they've transformed into a, you know, digital space. And it really, they've built a bank within a bank in many ways, right? So we started with them. It took us a year almost to just get the basic foundation right. And today we do almost 60 crores monthly with Utkarsh Small Finance Bank. So it's been a fantastic journey. And then came Axis Bank, right? Who again is now become a strong lending partner. So I think we've got a very good and varied set of lending partners. The banks especially are liking us for the reasons I explained, a long tenured book, a thought process which aligns with a banking thought process. Customer handling is, you know, respectful and sensible. So I guess a combination of all of this is what has helped us build. With this capital raise, thanks to you folks and TVS, we have now started the on-book lending journey. So we've started lending on Finable Books as well. through our own NBFC. And I guess in future, we are looking at this as a good mix of both, with on-book taking getting ahead of the platform business, and that's the mix we are going towards.
So how large a company do you think this is going to be?
How large it can be is how large we want it to be, right? I think there is, from a demand side in India, the growth can be huge, right? The question is, can we have delivered credit performance over the last 6-7 years. Can we continue to deliver the similar credit performance? We believe we can better it, right? We have got the amount of data we had when we started, we have like 100 times more data available. But through various points that we've been collecting over time, right? So we believe credit cost is under control. We believe that debt lines are available. In the last 4 months, as Amit was explaining, we have tried to get some debt. Very, very forthcoming response from all the debt providers. Looks like more equity we should be able to raise. I think if all of this falls into place, my sense is that within 5 years' time, we should get to our 10,000 crores of AUM. And the way things are shaping up, we have already become profitable. This month, hopefully, we will do 2% return on asset. In 4-5 years' time, we are looking at a 5% return on asset. So with a 10,000 crore book size, 500 crores of profitability, we believe we will look for an IPO. And at least in the short-term goal, that's what we want to achieve.
Yeah. You know, for me, there are many things sort of coming together when I just see sort of the journey. And for me, it begins with the crisis-tested both founding team, but also the management team, which has just gone through every crisis.
Yeah.
And even in the journey so far, in the last 15 months or so, there have been many crises along the way. And I think through every crisis, two things have stood out. One, you balance growth versus asset quality, and you immediately say asset quality. Even when I asked you how large a company, you first started with asset quality.
Yeah.
And I think that really gives, at least for me, confidence that asset quality will always be at a premium. And I've seen that happen through every crisis.
Yeah.
And the second is, variety of regulatory reasons, our money didn't come in at exactly that time and so on. You just said resource constraints are always going to be there and part of life, and we will just keep continuing along that journey and generate different resources at different costs and figure that out.
Yeah.
I would say that's the number one thing that's coming together. And the second thing, I know you give me some credit for coining that, but it's like the daily compounding that I see on essentially that asset quality. I think it's just phenomenal that you guys have instilled that in the team.
Yeah.
Where every day people are saying, this, like you said, 20 algorithms to 200 algorithms, algorithms on risk.
Yeah.
That one extra, it'll give us 0.1 extra on risk.
Yeah.
And that 10 basis points is worth it, right? And that's what the great lending companies do. So I think for me, there is this opportunity, and obviously all of us respect Bajaj Finance as this humongous lender. Many people have tried to replicate that story, but we are really big believers that you're really going to be part of that journey.
Yeah, I mean, you were doing some interviews with our team, right? We have built we are really proud of the team that we have built. Z47, as part of their DD process, were talking to our salespeople on the ground. I'm talking about sales. I'm not talking about credit risk or analytics, right? The one thing they came back and they were pleasantly surprised was they're talking the same language that you talk. They're talking about credit as a first goal that they have to meet rather than the business number. I think that's what you got most comfort in. So that's an organization we are building. If you come walk through the corridors of Finable, most of the discussion that you will see is credit risk under control or not. Every decision we make is around credit risk.
On that note, thank you so much for this conversation. We've really enjoyed the partnership and really looking forward to the journey ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anish.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vikram. Thank you.
If you like this episode of Zero to Infinity, there are so many more that you must check out. If you like Indian startup content, hearing about founder journeys, or knowing more about emerging sectors that we're investing in, Zero to Infinity is the channel that you need to subscribe to.